BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
I was on fire with my picks against the spread. Look, I'm not one of these guys that like sits around spending my week handicapping football games, giving out five-star picks. I just make good, sound, educated predictions on games that I think I have a feel for. The teams I follow, the coaches I talk with. For example, I had talked with Mario Cristobal and communicated with Mario Cristobal all throughout the spring, all throughout the summer, even game week against Florida. And I gathered he felt really good about his team and his chances to win. Just could kind of see that one coming. So it helped me make that game prediction. In other cases, I picked against some teams based on things that I had heard and seen. So against the spread in week one, I went 12-3. Very, very close to causing me to quit my day job, jobs, plural, move to Vegas, get a 1-900 number started. Very, very close. If I had gone 15-0, I think I would have done it. But I did not. I'm well aware I could go 3-12 next week. Still, I did so well that the Big Sky Conference reached out to me and said, hey, would you like to be our guest picker this week? So I'm going on their show tomorrow to make my Big Sky Conference picks. Well, the commissioner of the Big Sky Conference is Tom Wistersell, and he's joining us now. He's going to help me understand his conference because that's how I make my picks. How are you, Commissioner?
I'm wonderful. Is this the West Coast Swami hotline that I've joined?
It is. It's a 1-900 thing now. No, I make my picks. I expect to win more than I miss. I don't expect to start 6-0 and end up 12-3 against the spread, 15-0 straight up at the end of the weekend, but I'll take it in week one. Now all the pressure's on me. Where did you go? Which games did you see as a commissioner? Where did you go in week one?
So I was fortunate. We had a week zero game, so I was down in Albuquerque watching Montana State beat New Mexico, so that was great. That was a couple weekends ago. And then Thursday night, I was in San Jose watching Sac State play San Jose. And then Saturday, I made my first trip to Corvallis and watched Idaho State, Oregon State in that beautiful new stadium they have there. I really enjoyed Corvallis, John. I mean, that's a really nice town. I had a lot of fun there in the 24 hours I was there.
I love it. And then you saw Oregon, Idaho pushing Oregon late in the fourth quarter, gave them a scare there. Look, I know a lot of this is these are, we call them payday games. Do you call them payday games in your world where your teams are picking up a check? It is very important to their athletic department.
We call them guarantee games, but it's kind of the same thing, you know, and so early season, no different than, you know, what Dan Lanning's doing at Oregon. He wants to see what he's got. Our teams want to see what they've got. And, you know, you schedule these games, a right balance of these guarantee games, so you get the money. But also, you want to see players, what happens when the lights come on. You know, guys look good in practice, but not until a live game situation do you really find out what you got. So, you know, that's what we try to do. We find a right balance between FCS opponents, G5 opponents like Mountain West teams, and then the Power Four. So each school has their own philosophy, but that's the goal.
Give me an idea of how the market for those games has changed and how it might continue to change in this expanded playoff era. What is the hope and what is the fear as it pertains to those guarantee games?
You know, every power, let's say the Power Four conferences now, each school has their own philosophy of who they want to play non-conference. The thing that's in our favor is they all want to get a minimum of six and many of them seven, sometimes eight home games. And so because of that, they can only play so many games against other Power Four teams. So then oftentimes they're looking for, they need a home game. They've got a particular date they need to fill. And that's where the Big Sky teams can come in. And, you know, some of our teams need to play two of those a year. to really kind of make their budgets work. Others only need to play one. But we can be kind of flexible with our non-conference schedule. So our ADs are always scheduling those money games first and kind of trying to figure out, hey, who's going to be, who's open the second week in September in 27. And, you know, is it Washington State? Is it Oregon? You know, is it Stanford? Whoever. And so, you know, the philosophy is we're going to fill in those gaps. You always worry about some of the schools, you know, like in Oregon, for example, right now, who, you know, a top 10 team and wants to compete for a national title, you know, they're going to have limited availability, like one date a year where they're going to play an FCS opponent. And so, you know, we want them to play the Big Sky schools. They're nice enough to want to play the local teams. A couple years ago, I was there. They played Eastern Washington. I know they played Portland State this year, Idaho. So, you know, it's a matter of kind of in the pecking order how it falls. And then it's the philosophy of that Power 4, Power 5 team of how many they need to balance out between an FCS opponent and an FBS opponent that helps them in their playoff rankings.
We saw some teams in your conference lose close. Cal Poly, Idaho, these were very respectable losses by any standard. Help us out, because there's a lot of panic in our region from Oregon fans who go, gosh, we should have blown that Big Sky team off the field. How good can Idaho be in the FCS division?
Well, I think anytime, and I think if you ask any of the Power 4 coaches, if you're playing a top 10 FCS team, you're in for a dogfight. Now, the coaches all know that. It's really hard to convince your players that that team can beat you. And so, you know, I've seen it before with those types of matchups. A few years ago, I was up at Seattle when Montana beat Washington, and Washington was, I believe, 18th or something like that in the country. You know, what happens is the game starts, and, you know, trying to get those kids motivated from the Power 4 team, because those FCS guys from the Big Sky, they come in fired up. You know, they got a chip on their shoulder. You know, so ones against ones, it can be a push for a while, and then all of a sudden it becomes a game. And now to get the Power 4 team to flip the switch, to play at the level that they can play at, that's hard. That's hard to get the players to do that, especially in game one. And that's how a team like Idaho is very experienced. They bring back pretty much their entire defense from last year's team that made it to the quarterfinals. And Jason Eck's a heck of a coach. He's going to have a good plan. He takes risks, but, you know, he knows what he's doing. And so that's how that can happen. If I'm an Oregon fan, I'm not that concerned about it. You won the game, and if hopefully you stayed healthy, and then you can take it out on Boise State this Saturday. So I just chalk it up to no one will remember in November what happened in week one unless you lost. That's my philosophy on that.
Truth in that. Tom Wistersoll is the Big Sky Conference Commissioner. He is with us. I know when the House decision went down that your campuses were not thrilled with sort of how a deal got made without having a voice or a seat at the table. As that shakes out, what are you thinking about now, and what has been the ultimate impact of that decision?
Well, the impact has still been very significant with, you know, our teams having to make a number of cuts around travel, around recruiting budgets. You know, when you're talking about, you know, schools that have a, you know, $15 to $20 million budget roughly, you know, and they're losing $200,000+, and all of a sudden, you know, that's pretty sizable. So, you know, we had to make some cuts. Our schools are still adjusting to those and kind of working through what it means for the entire fiscal year. You know, do we take some money off the back end, like I said, from a recruiting standpoint? Because what you're trying to do on campus is make sure it doesn't hurt the student-athlete experience. You know, you're not going to cut a nutritionist, or you know, you're not going to cut a coach, and you certainly don't want to drop sports. But the impact is far-reaching. And, you know, yeah, it's $200,000, $250,000 right now, and it's that way for the next 10 years. So it's been very painful. It's going to continue to be painful. And, yeah, we continue to not be happy with it. We're still hopeful that on Friday that Judge Wilkins signs the settlement, and that's good for all 360 schools in Division I. You know, and then we've still got some work to do with the NCAA to figure out, you know, what types of savings they can bring from the national office to hopefully take off some of that additional cost to us. So, So we'll see. There's still a lot of unanswered questions, and it's still a very unsettled time because of this settlement. But hopefully every day gets us closer to a little more calmer waters.
Yeah, I'm looking at the payouts for those guarantee games, and they have, range from $550,000 to, Alabama paying $1.8 million. I have to think, Tom, that in order to make ends meet, some of your schools are going to have to say, we need a little more money if we're going to play those games. Is it that simple, or what happens in that market with guarantee games?
Well, there's, FBS opponent can only play one FCS team a year without a penalty. So we would love to hold out for more money in some of those situations, but we're certainly happy with the contracts we have. And usually these are done 3, 4, 5 years in advance. So there's not a lot of adjustment we can make on some of those. Now, if all of a sudden conferences at the FBS level start adding conference games, that could drastically change our model, because then the number of games starts to dwindle. So, we're trying to maximize that revenue piece. It also helps if it's a bus trip. Like, for example, Idaho had to charter a plane to go to Eugene. When Portland State plays, down there in Eugene, they just bust down. So that's a pretty big savings there. So that's how it's kind of negotiated. There's no real set figure. It's basically supply and demand. And then, like I said, most of our friends like Rob at Oregon and Scott at Oregon State, they want to play regional competition. So that's why the Big Sky is a good fit for them.
I want to pivot to basketball a little bit, and you've served on that basketball committee. There's been some talk about taking away the automatic berths for some conferences and setting some parameters, or maybe expanding the field. What's the latest in your circle as it pertains to March Madness and potential changes?
Yeah, so I've finished 2 years. I have 3 years left on the basketball committee, and it's been a wonderful honor to be a part of it. Expansion continues to be a discussion point. There's no fixed timeline on it. It's also, we're treading very carefully. We recognize that this is the shining star of college athletics, is the NCAA basketball tournament. It's 97% of the NCAA's revenue comes from that tournament. So any tweak you may make to it, you got to be really careful that you're not impacting all 1,200 NCAA schools, which rely on that money and that organization to operate. So we talk a lot about it. There's nothing imminent. I can come up with 5 reasons why it's a good idea and 5 reasons why it's not a good idea. And that's kind of how we've approached the discussion. If it's not broke, don't fix it. But you also have to be open to the fact that times are changing and conferences get bigger. And, 18 teams in the Big Ten, that 11th team is still spending a lot of money, and they're going to want access to the tournament. And so what does that mean for us? Does that mean we need to change it? Does it not? But those are different pressures that happen around the country. I feel good about the AQs staying, the 31 conferences, that can get the AQs for the championship. I feel good about that staying. I think that's still a foundational principle around college athletics and NCAA Division I. But in these times where things are changing, everything's on the table. We talk a lot about it, but nothing's imminent. I don't see this happening here anytime soon.
Yeah, where will you be this weekend in week 2? Are you? Do you try to get out to a game every week, or how do you sort of approach it?
Yeah, what I do is I make sure I see every football team in person once, at least during the season. So conference games obviously can knock off a couple. And with non-conference, what I've been doing for the last few years is knock off places I haven't been to. Like I said, I've never been to Corvallis. And so I really enjoyed my trip there. This weekend I'm going to Laramie, Wyoming, and driven through it a few times, but never been to a game. I'm going to watch Idaho, the Vandals we just talked about. They play at Wyoming on Saturday. So unfortunately, their quarterback got hurt in that Oregon game. He broke his collarbone, so he's out for a few weeks. But hopefully they got a chance to pull an upset there in Wyoming, and I'll be there in Laramie to cheer them on this Saturday.
What does it do for your conference when you do get a win, like the Montana State in week 0, or, you've got Sacramento State playing Fresno State, you've got Cal Poly, Stanford, You've got some games against some upper division schools. What does that do to the Big Sky when you get one of those?
It's a huge lift for us. It shows certainly the return on investment that we put towards football. Football is a huge part of who we are and what we do. Winning a national championship at the FCS level is our goal every year. We have great coaches, great depth, great players, and it puts us on a national stage. And we believe we're the best and deepest conference in FCS. And I think any of the coaches at the FBS level that play against Big Sky schools, they know that they're in for a battle. You know, there's plenty of coaches who are playing Big Sky schools this week who are referencing the game that Idaho gave Oregon, trying to remind their players, don't take these guys for granted, you know. And so it's a great moment for our program. We've been fortunate enough every year to have two or three wins over FBS. Like I said, when you have, you know, I think we have 14 in the top 10, six of them ranked in the top 25. So we got really good football players and good coaches. And so it just verifies, like I said, our investment and the excitement that our football programs are able to bring to our campuses and communities.
Tom Wistersill, Big Sky Conference Commissioner. Wish you the best. Thank you for joining us, Tom.
Hey, John, always good to be with you. Good luck on your picks tomorrow. I'll be watching.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. There's the commish. I got to figure out what's going on in the Big Sky all of a sudden. They were like, oh, yeah, you got hot in week one. Let's have you be our guest picker for week two. So I will join the Big Sky, and I'll be trying to handicap those games in addition to my other stuff. What am I doing? Taking on more work. Coming up, we're going to talk to a scout who had his eyes on Oregon. What is wrong at Oregon? Or is there really that much wrong at Oregon? Is it just week one overreaction? Let's be real. I'm going to say something that I think needs to be said. Never as bad or never as good as you think it is. That goes for everything. This radio show is never as bad or never as good as people will tell me it is. Some people will be like, this is the best show ever. I'm like, nah, it's not the best show ever. But others will say, oh, your show stinks. I'm like, no, it doesn't stink. It's never as bad or never as good. Well, which is it with Oregon? We'll be talking, coming up with a NFL scout who has worked for multiple organizations. Brentley Weissman, former scout with the Chargers, Raiders, and others. He watched Oregon. He reached out to me at the end of the Oregon game. And he says, I need to come on your show. He's coming on next. Leave it here.